Welcome to Breakdown. I'm Charles Ames. Today we'll talk with KTAH-FM Executive Director Louisa Beal about KTAH's origin and plans. Next in Both Sides Now, we'll have a debate about party ideologies. And then I'll finish with an overview of Trump's presidency. That's all coming up now in Breakdown. Let's roll. This is Charles Ames with KTAH-LP-FM. I'm talking with Louisa Beal, who is the executive director of KTAH-LP-FM. How are you doing, Louisa?
Hi, Chaz. Thank you.
All right. Now, apparently I need to underline that we are an LP-FM. What the heck is that all about, Louisa?
Oh, yeah. LP-FM means low power, frequency modulated. So a lot of people are familiar with AM and FM on the radio band, but low power FM was created by the FCC in 2013. So it opened up the bandwidth and communities and organizations could apply for an LP-FM license. And so that's where Radio Tacoma got born.
Okay, well, how did KTAH 101.9 on your FM dial get started?
Well, in 2013, as I said, Carrie Griffiths, who is a board member now, she came to a meeting with a lot of other people, and she said, hey, the FCC is opening up this window where organizations can apply for an LPFM license. Anybody interested? And of course, I was in a manic phase, so boom, up went my hand. And so that's where it started. And we soon got some other people involved. We went through the application process. It was a bear, but we did finally get our construction permit in 2014. And so we had 3 years to get all our equipment and a transmitter and antenna and all the other stuff we needed. And so in October of 2017, we started broadcasting.
This might be a question only I'd be interested in. Just this sounds like when it comes to radio stations, typically there's an outlay of thousands of dollars, but you're making it sound kind of simple.
It is grassroots, definitely. And it was designed that way. Our initial outlay was for our antenna, our transmitter, our emergency alert system, because we're part of that system, and various microphones and, you know, things like that. And so our initial outlay, I don't know the exact figure, but it was under $5,000.
And you've got all this stuff stored at your cutting edge state-of-the-art studio?
Oh, don't I wish. That's next on our wish list, and that's going to be a little bit more pricey. Right now we are recording and transmitting from our laptops at home, and which has worked okay, but to make the next step, we need to have a studio where we can have people come in to record, where we can have meetings, events, and really get a better connection to the community.
And so this is something that probably would make your staff happy as well, too. You want to tell us about your staff?
Oh, my staff. Well, it's about 8 feet long, and it supports
me. All right,
me when...
Louisa, come on, for crying out loud. Paid versus volunteer, of course, you know I'm going for.
I have no staff. We are all volunteers. I cannot tell anybody to do anything, even though I supposedly am a director. The only thing I can do is yell cut. So
you can do that around the house.
So we have probably about 6 to 8 volunteers who have their own special sphere of expertise, and which really has been working out well. But again, we're all volunteer and we are always looking for new blood. Oops, I probably shouldn't say it that way, especially around
Fresh
Halloween.
meat, is that the word you're looking
Oh,
for?
it could be fresh meat, yeah.
Volunteers to fall under your scythe. Well,
Yes.
now this surprised me. I remember the first day I met you talking about it to a group, and like, hey, I have the difficulty of ha keeping my mouth shut. Let's talk. But overall, how common are public radio stations?
Well, there's a difference. Okay, NPR, National Public Radio, is a public radio station, but they get grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and they get grants and support from other corporations and whatnot. And they are really more of a national radio program. LPFM is more community-based and it's volunteer, and of course the budgets are astronomically different. And so whereas NPR can, send people around the world for stories and whatnot, we send maybe our electrons around the world, and that's about it.
Via the internet, getting over. With the couple minutes we have remaining, can you tell me plans for KTAH and any aspirations for the station format, anything like that?
Well, as I mentioned before, the biggest thing is trying to get studio space. So, if any listeners know of either commercial space to rent or possibly even buy, we may have a donor with a generous loan that we could take advantage of. So, that's in the realm of possibility. Other than that, my aspirations is to become more community involved. Before the pandemic, we had tabling events at all sorts of places. We had a couple of community get-togethers where we would, sign up volunteers and get people to record station identifications and just have some fun with radio. So
Cool.
that's my feeling.
And between you and me, I understand there's a pretty nifty program coming up called George and Gracie, and maybe that's as much as we can say about that right now.
Well, yeah, it could be Grace and Georgie, but I'm not sure.
No.
No,
Grace and George. I can't even remember now. All right,
no.
well, that's it. That's all the time we have. This fits perfectly into the program I've got going for today. So I'd
Okay.
like to thank Louisa Beal, the executive director for KTAH LPFM, not to be confused with long playing. All right, Louisa, we will talk to you again real
Yeah.
soon, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Chaz.
This is Charles Ames. I'm here with Dr. Phil Kiever, who's a noted guest lecturer and also recently had a radio program of a conservative nature in Spokane. He also is the author of three books that are now available on Amazon. Welcome, Dr. Phil Kiever.
Hey, bud, what's going on?
Man, I am thrilled to have you here. This is going to be something nifty, something wonderful, something new. We're friends, but yet we admit that we are both on opposite sides of the spectrum, and I'm sending roses to your surviving family. I want to establish today that ideologies for the Republicans and for the Democrats has flipped over a period of time. There's nothing Republicans love more to say, well, you Democrats, you used to be slaveholders. Yep, got us dead to rights, no question about it. But I'd also like to point out that since then, they championed women's rights in 1920, Social Security in 1935, minimum wage, national parks, GI Bill, civil rights, Medicare, eliminating child labor, seat belts, unleaded gas, clean air, clean water, financial oversight, tobacco regulation, curb ramps, eliminating CFCs, saving car companies, safe working conditions, Obamacare, vaccinations. Where do I end, Phil?
Well, I could argue with a lot of that, but I would just point out that as a Republican and my fellow Republicans, we like clean air and clean water. I like unleaded gasoline. So, you know, to say that the Democrat Party, you know, owns the mantle of good things that have come out of bipartisan legislation, the GI Bill, you know, the Veterans Administration, I can point out was created by two sentences in Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural address is what birthed the VA. So, you know, Republicans, we can claim a lot of those things too, but I think we need to, you know, turn down the temperature and do what's best for America today, rather than, you know, this is who we used to be as either Democrat or a Republican.
And it just seems like a lot of the Sturm und Drang that has been dredged up, I want to lay at the feet of one Rupert Murdoch, who got kicked out of Australia because he divided them. He went to Great Britain and then got kicked out of there because he divided them. And now he's come to the American shores and has divided them. So what are we going to do about that?
Well, there has been a lot of balkanization, if I can use that word, so early or late in the day, depending on where you happen to be listening, that have divided us. And if you want to say that Robert Murdoch, as the head of Fox News, is responsible for the division of America, you know, I would argue that until my cows come home, and there's nine of them, so that could take a couple of minutes. But I will acknowledge that there has been a political division that has occurred in our country, and probably goes all the way back to the time when Democrats were slaveholders in the Civil War, or as some people call it, you know, the Second American Revolution. It is no secret that I now live in the South. I reside in North Carolina, which is a former you know, state of the Confederacy. And there are people in my, not social circles, but in my periphery that that are ready for a third American revolution, depending on what the issues are, you know, abortion, immigration, election interference, you know, subversion of votes, whatever the issue is. And I don't think just Republicans own that disdain for our current government. I think 48 or 49% of Democrats probably own the same disdain for the previous administration or even the House of Representatives today. So to say that Rupert Murdoch is the sole responsible person for our political divisions, it's disingenuous.
Well, how many socialists, let's say, libtards, have killed conservatives? Because last I checked, it was at least a couple hundred. Now it's probably close to 300. I'll give you the 200. We can document those that have killed in the name of right-wing zealotry.
Is your question how many conservatives have killed liberals in the name of right-wing beliefs?
That's already a given, but I'm trying to point out that when it comes to being radical, that's where you can draw the line in my book. And therefore,
I would like to point out that, you know, if we want to talk about the unrest that we've had recently, I didn't know January 6th was a thing until January 7th. I guess I was not on the right social media circles. I wasn't in the right chat rooms. I had no idea that, you know, a protest, we'll call it that, a protest that may have gotten out of hand, was even scheduled. So if we want to look at mass shootings, I mean, one that comes to mind, there was, you know, that trans individual at the private school, I think in Tennessee, whose manifesto espoused a lot of socialist rants, if you will. A lot of it's been redacted, but what has seeped out seems like that person was a liberal and also carried some personal grudges against the conservatives in the school who may have oppressed her, his, you know, beliefs as to, you know, how they wanted to dress and what they wanted to be called. But I don't think addressing violence in general and trying to put a political label on it is good or is healthy. If we have an assassination or an assassination attempt that is one political party against another, then sure, absolutely. You could say that was either, you know, a conservative or a liberal that did it. I mean, James Earl Ray, the guy who killed Martin Luther King, okay, he was a conservative. Everybody knows it. Martin Luther King at the time was a Democrat, although Martin Luther King today would be a Republican, which I think fits very well and dovetails into this conversation that we're having.
All right, cool. And so when it comes to concepts like January 6th, clearly people who claim to be Americans, you and I have both taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. How do these people who are storming up the steps and are going to confront Capitol Police, who are going to try to subvert democracy, say that they are patriots?
Well, there's a couple really important things I want to address. First of all, we're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. And if I was seated on a jury for any of these people who were arrested on January 6th, if all you did was breach the Capitol building, you didn't assault a Capitol Hill police officer, you were just in the people's house and you're being charged with trespassing or fomenting a revolution or whatever these federal charges with a lot of time are carrying, I would have voted not guilty. You cannot be held trespassing into a building that you in fact own. If you assaulted a Capitol Hill police officer, you deserve to go to prison, okay? But in terms of who these patriots are, and I do know a family very well from Spokane County. That's as far as I'll drill down in identifying them. But a woman and her son were traveling to Washington, D.C., for January 6th, and she contacted me the week before and asked, how to ride the metro and where she should stay and all of this. And I just thought she was just taking her son to Washington, D.C. to see the sights. Again, I didn't know that this was coming down the road. And this woman is salt of the earth, goes to church, takes in 15, 16 foster kids, a farm wife, votes, pays her taxes, just an all around genuine God fearing red, white, and blue American. And she felt strongly enough either about the results of the election or the rhetoric that the president at the time, he whose name shall not be spoken, okay, President Trump at the time, whatever fomented in her heart and her stomach to take her only son, their only biological child, all the way across the country. I don't think she'd ever crossed the Idaho border before. And to take up vocal arms, I know she took up vocal arms, and that her and her son did get tear gassed. She didn't breach the Capitol. She didn't go into the people's house. She didn't assault the police officer, but she was there. So until we address the chasm that exists between that American who's saying, hey, I think my election results are wonky, and some other American who says, oh, hey, the president's a criminal. We're still talking about Trump, not Biden yet, and his storage locker in the Corvette in Delaware. Until we address that chasm, we're not going to pass a budget. The government shut down.
And I'd love to come back to Rupert Murdoch. Maybe that's my hanging tree. Because I just think that there was a point in time where, yes, there were some debates. I have this image of my grandparents complaining about McGovern and complaining about maybe begrudgingly about Nixon. But we are 1,000 times farther apart since then. And I don't like what our kids listening to this and thinking they're crazy, or that we're dealing with genuine bona fide concerns about the other party.
Okay, well, I think that social media certainly exaggerates and amplifies the divisions that have always been there. And to give, a social media example, just in general, we have had presidents that were homosexuals. We've had presidents who were bisexuals, and everybody knew it. Everybody talked about it. But it didn't get amplified on social social media, and I'm not making a judgment call on homosexuality at all. I mean, James Buchanan was a well-known homosexual. Abraham Lincoln may have had something going on with his secretary. John Quincy Adams had a boyfriend in the Senate that used to go skinny dapping down in the Potomac, and no one cared. And so now fast forward that to, oh my God, my neighbor is a Democrat, and I'm going to talk about it in, you know, the social media chat room here in our little neighborhood, or I'm going to go over into that yard and kick over the sign, right? Or the Democrats saying, oh my God, you know, the guy in front of me in traffic has got a Trump sticker, and I'm going to take a picture of his license plate, and I'm going to put it on Facebook, and I'm going to follow this guy down at the Piggly Wiggly or the Kroger or the Safeway and confront this person, and I'm going to film it, you know, and live stream it. I think we've always had those divisions and always been 1,000 miles apart. I mean, again, we fought a war and killed hundreds of thousands of each other before social media. And now we have people still clutching their pearls and, you know, wringing their wrists and saying, oh my God, my neighbor owns an AR-15 and they're going to vote for Trump again. You know, we have to move. I think it has just been amplified by the times and the technology.
That's as much time as we have, Phil. I'm looking forward to having future conversations on various subjects. This has been Charles Ames talking with Dr. Phil Kiever. The spelling of his name is K-I-V-R. He likes to say K like river with a K. His books are available on Amazon. He's a noted guest lecturer. And I'm looking forward to conversations in the future, Phil.
I know you are.
I love you, man.
I still hate your guts.
All right. Talk to you later.
Listen, he lost the popular vote twice, impeached twice, a one-term president. He has been judged a rapist. He has been convicted of carrying two sets of books for his properties, and now will begin to lose those properties. I kept a daily log of Trump's actions during his administration. Not a day went by that he didn't miss a chance to diminish America in some way. This seemed to be okay with Vladimir Putin. Did Trump make America great again, or did he lie? Are you tired of winning yet? And when did he make it great? When he attacked democracy, or when he allowed 1 million of us to die? Or when he stole hundreds of classified documents and displayed them like his son's dead trophies? Then suddenly U.S. intelligence started dying off coincidentally. Did he release his tax returns? Did he ban lobbyists? Did he lock her up? Or will he do that after he is locked up? Did he work harder than any other president? Or did he stay in his bedroom every day until noon? Did he build the wall and make Mexico pay for it? Did he drain the swamp? Or did a dozen of his staff get locked up? Did he create a big, beautiful Medicare for all? No one will be left out. Did he eliminate the federal debt? Or did he balloon it by $8 trillion with tax cuts for billionaires? Did he take no vacations, never have time for golf like Obama? Or did he play golf every 3 days, more than Obama? Maybe it would have been better if he played golf every day. When Ebola came to America, Obama made sure it was contained. Death rate, zero. When Zika came to America, Obama made sure it was contained. Death rate, maybe one. Maybe. So Obama created a pandemic panel and a protocol to handle it. He also had a CDC liaison to China, where COVID started. Trump eliminated both. New Zealand essentially stopped COVID cold by locking down sensibly and contact tracing. Over 1 million unnecessary deaths of Americans happened. Over 1,000 of us died every day then. And as a national average, over 2 years was stripped of your life expectancy. Trump lied about Obama not being a U.S. citizen. He lied when he said he'd tax his rich friends. He lied when he said he'd support unions. He lied about his inauguration crowd size. He lied saying 3 million illegals voted. He He lied saying he had a secret 30-day plan to defeat ISIS. He lied saying Obama founded ISIS. He lied saying he'd bring offshore jobs back. He lied saying he'd bring coal jobs back. He lied saying global warming is a hoax created by China. He lied saying Ted Cruz's father killed JFK. He lied saying Bernie Sanders wants a 90% tax. He lied saying he didn't know David Duke. He lied saying his father wasn't arrested at a Klan rally. He lied saying crime was on the rise. He lied saying black people kill 81% of white homicide victims. He lied when he said he saw Muslims celebrating after 9/11. He lied about saying he'd sue the 12 women who claimed sexual assault. He lied about cutting the deficit, then increased it by 25%. He lied about replacing Obamacare with a big, beautiful health care. No one will be left out. In fact, the Washington Post counted 30,000 lies just during his administration. Trump had a closed-door reception with Russians on his 12th day in office, in the Oval Office. He's tried every year to cut Social Security. And why won't American banks give him loans? Why is his family forbidden to fundraise? When he saw he lost, he dumped the Afghanistan withdrawal into the next guy's lap. Trump has broken all of the Ten Commandments. No other gods? He repeated, like he is the second coming of God. False gods? You remember the golden bust of Trump at the Orlando CPAC. Lord's name in vain? I want that goddamn blankety-blank statement right now, although an F-bomb got dropped in there. Holy Sabbath? Never attends church, nor allows his staff to. Honor thy father and mother? Change his father's will as Fred was slipping into dementia. Murder? Allowed a million of us to die through his intentional inaction. Adultery? Really? Steal? He had to pay back $25 million for the Trump University ripoff. There are 4,000 lawsuits against him. 8 charities that he ripped off. False witness, Obama, Central Park 5, Hillary. Covet, lied about the crowd sizes and covets dictator's autonomy. Name one Trump success. Trump will never get an aircraft carrier named after him. Never get a school named for him. Never see his face on a coin. His successive generations will never be elected. So I ask you, is America great again? So tell me where I'm wrong.